supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to the 17th anniversary edition of You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and yes, we did go on the air on October 3rd of 1998, back in the 20th century, ladies and gentlemen. We will have some special shows later in the month to celebrate that anniversary, but right now we will take... We will have some special shows later in the month to celebrate that anniversary, and later in this show, we will have the always special question of the week on fall webworms in pecan trees. But how better to celebrate 17 years on the air than with that heaping helping of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Alan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Alan. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, sir.
And where is Alan Fine?
Northeast Philadelphia.
Where in Northeast Philadelphia?
Crewstown, the Busselton section.
My wife and my college girlfriend are both from Crewstown. They are both ragdolls from the Catholic high school out there.
Okay.
So what can we do for Alan in the beautiful neighborhood of Crewstown?
Well, you know that we are horizontally stressed out here. We live in a single home, and I only have one nice section to plant tomatoes in.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I have to replant in that section all the time, and I'm susceptible to verticillium wilt and probably all the other wilts that happen when you plant in one section all the time.
Very good.
And noodling around the internet, I have found that there is something called root shield that is actually a fungus that will go into the root hairs and will keep out the fusarium and a few other kinds of fungus, but it didn't say anything about verticillium.
How
And I'd like to know if it'll work on verticillium.
Well, you obviously know what's going on. Those are the two main soil-borne wilts. I think you're also correct in that you're probably battling verticillium more than fusarium, because verticillium is more common in the north and fusarium picks up as you go down south. But the symptoms are the same. Tomatoes planted in the same spot year after year will, after 3 years, start yellowing down at the bottom. And as the years progress, the symptoms will get worse and earlier until finally, you know, your plants just die sometime in July. I have not heard about what you're describing. It seems like it could have potential. Did you read this in a scientific article or at a natural product sales site?
I first went to the outfit that helps you, Gardens Alive.
Oh, okay.
They have a product with it. And then noodling around, I found this Root Shield Plus that has two of the fungi that will replace the verticillium or the fusarium in any case.
Right.
And I just wanted to know if you had heard about it.
I have heard of different things that are used at the root system to try to prevent disease. I have to be honest and say I haven't tried any of them. I know nothing about them, but that is the emerging science in organic agriculture. And I would certainly encourage somebody in your situation to try them. How many tomato plants do you grow?
Probably about 15.
Oh, okay. Well, I would get both. And I would test each one on a couple of plants. And I would label those plants very clearly so you know what's going on. Now, are you already planting disease-resistant varieties that have the letters?
Always.
Okay.
Always.
So you're planting tomatoes that have the letters V and F after their name, showing that they have been proven to have resistance to these soil-borne wilts. Have you?
And I start my own seeds so that I can make sure that that's the case.
Okay, good. And have you tried grafted tomatoes?
No, I haven't.
But you've heard about them?
Yes.
This is, quote, new again. Grafted tomatoes have been some of the hottest talk in home gardening for like 5 years now. But this was hot also back in the 40s. Small-scale farmers who grew their own tomatoes from seed like you would often graft the variety they wanted to grow on top of a rootstock that was more suited for their local environment. And some of the rootstocks that are available are highly resistant to these soil-borne wilts. The important thing to remember if you're going to go with grafted tomatoes is that the graft has to be above the soil line. So you can't plant those tomatoes deeply. You want to make sure that graft stays above the soil line. But in your situation, it might be worth providing the extra support that you're going to need there to try that. So I would definitely get both of these products. I would test them independently. If you're going to do 15 tomatoes, I would do 5 of the one, 5 of the other, and then I would do 5 with grafted tomatoes. And at the end of the season, we want to hear back from you.
Thank you very much, Mike. I'll be happy to call you back.
All right. We will be anxiously awaiting your call, Alan.
Got it.
Take care, man.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Best of luck. 1-888-346-9499. Sarah, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Sarah. Where are you?
I'm between Muncie and Gaston, Indiana.
Very good. What can we do for Sarah in Indiana?
I would like for you to tell me the plum tree that I could grow here. I have tried maybe 4 or 5 different kinds, and I can't seem to get any of them to grow. And I was wondering what I'm doing wrong.
There are several different types of plum trees. I believe there are European, there are Japanese, there are hybridized versions, there may be Native American types as well. I know my friend Lee Reich, who's the fruit tree expert, has said the diversity in the family of plums is immense. But one of the other things that Lee has always said is there's a plum tree for almost every climate. And even though they're not grown very much in home gardens, so people are not as aware of their needs as, say, peaches or apples or something like that. But they are very much like peaches or apples in the sense that they have what's called a chilling requirement. Probably the only place you have to grow very specialized plums is in a very warm climate. And they have bred varieties with a need for what are called low chilling hours, which are nights below 45. Where are you planting your plums?
I've got like a small orchard. I haven't lived here long. Say the last 4 or 5 years is all I've been here. And the winters to me seem brutal, I can't overwinter them. They grow fine during the summer, but then during the wintertime is when I'm having my problem.
Okay, and you say you have an orchard. What grows well in the orchard?
It's apples. Mm-hmm. And then I've this year got some contender peaches to put there because my other peach trees that I had didn't seem to want to grow. They died out during the winter also. I have some cherry trees that was here, but they're real small, and I don't know what they are or anything. But they do produce, and they're good little trees. And then I have pear trees that's produced quite a bit, and that's just about it so far.
Okay, so where...
I have raspberries and blackberries, but they both died out this winter.
Now, that makes no sense. You're in a great climate to grow raspberries and blackberries. And
that's what I thought, too. But they didn't. They had to come up from the bottom this year.
Is this an exposed area with hellish winds or something?
Yes, it's farmland. And you know, whenever they take the crops out, well, then it's just like flat land.
Okay, so you're surrounded by farmland that is bare ground in the winter, and the wind
Okay.
So I have 2 suggestions for you. Go to the Indiana State Extension Service's website, read their bulletin on plum trees, and see what varieties they recommend. Have you been buying your plum trees locally?
Yes, I have.
Okay. I hope they came with a warranty. You should be able to cash it in.
No, I mean, I don't think they did.
Okay.
I just figured if they didn't grow, it was something that I was doing wrong.
No. I think I have good news and bad news. So what I want you to do is go to the website, look at the trees that Indiana recommends for your part of the state. Then I want you to call your local extension office and talk about your microclimate and your winds and see if they have a super hardy variety that they can recommend. The bad news is I think you need windbreaks, whether it's surrounding the orchard with a small wall or ornamental grasses, something that's going to stop the wind, because I don't think it's the cold winters that are killing your young trees. I think it's the wind. A lot of people think winter kills plants, and a lot of times it is the wind that just whips the moisture out of these plants during an already dry time. If you can grow some plants or rig up a temporary fence of burlap wrapped across some stakes, anything to break the prevailing wind into this orchard is going to be worth $1 million for your productivity.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck, Sarah.
Thank you much.
Take care. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will visit Fredericksburg, Virginia for two appearances at the Fall Home and Craft Show on Sunday, October 18th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to tell you all about wedworms and pecan trees and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. And by HarvestRite. HarvestRite's home freeze dryer allows you to preserve your own freeze-dried food that can last 25 years. Meat, fruit, vegetables, and ice cream can be freeze-dried at home. More at HarvestRite.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Today, the very day that we air in our hometown of Philadelphia, marks 17 years of You Bet Your Garden on the air. Question of the week is about webworms and pecan trees, coming up later in the show, but we're celebrating by taking lots of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. David, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you doing, Mike?
I am doing just ducky today. David, how are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing great other than this invasion I'm having here at the house.
And where is David's invaded house?
It's in College Station, Texas.
What's invading David's house in College Station?
I have a trumpet vine infestation. And it is everywhere, and no matter what I do, it comes back even stronger.
You know, David, housing prices are up now, and they're talking about people can, like, now get good money to sell their house and move to another place, maybe a little bit bigger. How about the advice of cutting it all to the ground in the fall, selling your house over winter and not leaving a forwarding address? How do you like that?
That might be the way it needs to go.
Did you plant the trumpet vine?
No, I did not. As far as I know, it just grew here naturally. The subdivision's built on kind of, it was like an old lake area, and then there's lots of vegetation around it. So as far as I know, it's been here as long as the house has been here.
Oh, man, I'm going back to moving. I mean, you know, interest rates are still low, Dave. You know, how long have you been there fighting this thing?
Well, it was my dad's house before.
Oh, good Lord.
The house has been here for 30 years.
Man. I'm not sure exactly what's underneath you as we go through the planet. But, you know, there's somebody in China or Australia battling the other end of this fine. You know, they're the only true way to get rid of this monster, which probably is just has a root system covering your entire property, is to dedicate three seasons to its total eradication. This has actually worked with running bamboo. Any plant can only store so much energy in its root system, and it expends a lot of energy when it grows biomass. Now, it replaces that energy two ways, one of which is to take nutrients from the soil, which we can't stop. But the other way is through photosynthesis. So the rope-a-dope method of getting rid of these invasive plants is to cut them to the ground, let them regrow until they form their first couple of true leaves, and those leaves just start to open up, and then cut them to the ground again. You have to dedicate yourself to this for a couple of seasons, especially where you are, where you're not going to have really much cold weather to slow this thing down. And the second year, you may not notice any difference right away. But by the middle of the summer of the second year, you're going to see this thing starting to sweat. You're going to see one of its eyes closed up. It's going to be leaning on the ropes. By the third season you start doing this, you're going to see much smaller plants coming out of the ground. And that's the time to just lean into it and then finish it off.
Okay, that's good advice.
Even chemical herbicides aren't going to do anything really different than that. There's just too much of a massive system. And when you finally get it down to just like small wheat growth coming out of the ground, then you can take advantage of your naturally hot and dry climate and start spraying it with an organic herbicide. There are new organic herbicides that are iron-based. The iron is toxic to many plants, although it's good for lawns, so it's great to use on broadleaf weeds or weeds like this if they're growing in a grassy area, because the iron actually strengthens lawn grasses. But it's a great broadleaf herbicide. It's totally non-toxic to you and your environment, your pets, your things like that. And it, I'm not sure it would do much for like a full-grown monster plant. But once you weaken it and get it on the ropes, then you can back off and start spraying this thing. And with any herbicide, you always want to be spraying during hot, dry weather when the plant is already stressed. Don't waste your time if you've had a lot of rain or the ground is moist, because it won't have as much effect then.
All right. I appreciate your help, Mike.
All right, David. Call back for our 20th anniversary and tell us you won.
Okay. Sounds good.
Take care, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Colleen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Colleen. How are you?
I'm doing well.
And where is Colleen doing well?
I'm in Carlisle, PA.
Okay. And that's like coal country?
That is, yeah, the middle of nowhere, central PA.
Okay. What can we do for Colleen up in Carlisle?
I am a middle school teacher at Lamberton Middle School, and I was put in charge of the garden club last year. I'm a new gardener, and it is a 180-foot by 40-foot garden, so it was a little overwhelming at first. And the previous garden club instructor retired, and he told me that there is a fungus that killed half of the crop of pumpkins last year.
He's wrong.
So he's wrong.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, when you have a garden area that big, the first thing you want to do is either break it up into raised beds or at least defined growing areas and walking areas. Because if you don't define your walking areas, then you're always stepping on your plants. You're always crushing their roots. So, oddly enough, that's job number one, is to reduce that stress on the plants. If you go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org and click on Garden Answers A to Z and go to the letter R, there's all sorts of directions and alternatives and options for building raised beds.
Okay.
Now, pumpkins are a form of squash that has a hollow vine. Their most basic pest is called the squash vine borer. This is a night-flying moth that comes into the garden at night, especially if the garden is lit at night because it's near street lamps or near a school where they keep the lights on. This night-flying moth lays her eggs at the base of the squash vine where they emerge from the soil. The eggs hatch. A little caterpillar goes into the vine, and it's so small you can't see the hole right away, but then the caterpillar chews on the inside of the vine and gets very large, and then the plants all wilt and die because the vines have been severed at the soil line. So
okay.
I will bet dollars to donuts that if you go out and do some CSI, find where some of these roots are growing in the ground, you will see that they're almost separated. And if you want, you can follow the trail and maybe find a big greasy caterpillar inside the vines, although this late in the season, they may have already turned into moths. So, do you know how the pumpkins are planted? Are they direct seeded?
Yes, they are.
It would be smarter, especially because you're in a middle school, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, in March or April, you can set up a small seed starting area in one of the classrooms. All you need is some fluorescent shop lights, you know, the six packs they use in regular garden centers, a nice soil-free mix, and you can start the pumpkins inside, which I would think would be a fabulous thing to have.
Yeah, that would be great.
Towards the end of the school year, they can watch the vines emerge from the soil. And then where you are, I would wait till June 1st because you're in a very cold area. And then I would transfer the plants out to the garden. And when you do that, wrap gauze. You know, just human medical gauze, like if you had a bad cut on your arm, wrap it around the vine so that where the vine emerges from the soil then has gauze going up the vine for about a foot.
Okay.
And that will physically prevent the moth from laying its eggs. That's the easiest situation, especially in the summertime when obviously school is closed and maybe there aren't as many people around to help and do inspection. And then be aware that pumpkins are the 800-pound gorillas of the garden. Their vines can grow 20, 30 feet in a single season, and they are real space hogs. So plant many fewer vines than you think you should so that they have room to sprawl. If you have four times as many vines as the ground can support, you're never going to be able to keep an eye on the vines to see if problems are developing. You're going to have mildew in a wet season. The plants aren't going to be happy. You'll get more pumpkins from fewer vines that have good airflow.
Okay.
And it also helps to keep track of how many actual plants you have and be able to follow their trails. Because once each vine has set three or four good pumpkins, you want to pull off any baby pumpkins after that.
Okay.
And that's the secret of getting good full-size pumpkins.
Perfect.
And then, if something starts eating them, then the following year you have to protect yourself from mice. But the soil fungus is totally bogus. He didn't know what he was talking about. I think you have squash vine borers, which are a very common pest. And, again, good airflow and lots of spacing for pumpkins.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Dwight, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thanks. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here, Dwight. Where are you?
I'm in Springfield, Ohio.
Very good. Home of the Simpsons, right?
Exactly. One of the many.
All right. What can we do for Dwight in one of the many Springfields, perhaps the best known?
I was calling to see about some trees in my front yard. I have planted some without doing very much research, unfortunately.
You and everybody else on the planet.
Right. Exactly. I planted trees. One is a dogwood tree, and then the other one is I think it's a red leaf maple, and
okay.
They're only about 4 feet tall, maybe five. I planted them, and my question is would it be wise to try and buy some more mature trees and take those smaller ones out? They look a little bit like Charlie Brown Christmas trees in our front yard, and we had pretty tall trees there that both fell over due to wind damage. Being in Ohio, we had tornadoes and pretty strong winds often. We had the stumps removed, and we wanted something out there. It's just a bare front yard, and would it be wiser to just use good fertilizing techniques and really enrich that ground and just hope for the best? Or maybe, wiser to choose a taller tree, a more mature tree, and take those out.
So you definitely had the stumps pulled to the old trees.
Well, I know they ground them down.
Okay, yeah, that's different.
Okay.
That's going to impede the growth of any new tree that was put in the ground, because the ground already has all this decomposing wood in it. That decomposing wood is going to absorb as many nutrients as you or God can put in that land for the next 20 years.
Okay.
So that's the rookie mistake, because the guys who cut the trees down often don't have the machinery to dig out the stumps as should be done. They'll talk you into grinding, which is also a lot less expensive. And if the trees are near the house, it may be the only option. How long have your little trees been in the ground?
Just 1 year, possibly. Well, you know what? I think they've been in there 2 years.
Okay.
Two years now.
So Dwight is also impatient. Did you plant them? Did you plant them personally?
Yes.
Okay. Were they bald and burlapped, or were they in a container?
They both were in plastic containers. I got them at a large box store. One of the home improvement centers.
Right.
I got them in their garden department.
So no offense, but you also realized you probably bought trees that are not going to succeed as much as a tree that came from a professional nursery.
Right, yeah.
So they came out of their pots and you planted them in the ground. Did you plant them really low to protect them from the wind, or did you plant them high enough that you can see the root flare above ground?
I planted them pretty low, I believe. I'd say the hole was, I would think, about 24 inches deep.
Right, and so the soil line went down from the pot way below the new hole you dug.
Right.
Okay, so one thing you might want to do is dig these trees up and replant them at the proper height this fall. They should actually be a foot higher than they are. Not only are your trees not thriving, they're probably going to die an early death, because their bark on the lower portion of the trunk is constantly being kept moist. They should be planted at a height where you can see the root flare. Did you improve the soil in the hole?
I confess I used chemical nutrients from like a popular company that, the soil that's fertilized with nitrogen.
Okay.
I did put that in there, and I did work that in.
Right.
I think probably you would advocate more an organic approach, but I did put good soil in.
Well,
rich soil, I guess.
You put in the opposite of good in my world, and that's another rookie mistake. You don't improve the soil in the hole, because the roots of your tree, as you find when you pull these trees up for whatever reason, the roots of those trees have stayed inside your island of good soil. You're supposed to refill the hole with the soil you removed. Did you then mulch the trees?
Yes, I mulched them this year. I didn't mulch them the first year.
Okay, and what did you mulch them with?
Just a local lawn service had the bark. It was infused with manure, I believe.
Ooh.
It had a strong smell, so it was bark.
Never
infused with manure.
Never use anything in your landscape that smells bad.
Okay.
That's,
wow, I tell you, I've done everything wrong.
Dwight, I'd like to send you home with a consolation prize, but you don't even get, you're not even going to get the home version of the game.
Right, exactly.
You have two options. First, I think once the trees go dormant this fall, before your soil freezes, the very least you should do is dig them up, plant them higher. get rid of that wood mulch. Just throw it in the trash or toss it into the woods or something like that. The manure or whatever, the bad smell could be from sour mulch, which is really toxic for plants. Then replace that nasty smelling mulch with 2 inches of real compost. That's not composted manure. That's black yard waste compost that doesn't smell bad and that's nice and black and rich. Or if you want to start over, a real garden center or nursery can sell you much larger trees right now for a great price because they don't want to overwinter them. And fall is the perfect time to plant new trees. So those are your two choices. Now, before you do either one, I want you to go to our website, youbetyourgarden.org. There's a big link at the top that says Garden Answers A to Z. Go to the letter T and read the Tree Planting 101 and follow those instructions for either the replanting or the new planting, and you'll do fine. But yes, the trees are not growing slowly. They're actually dying slowly because of the mistakes you made, which are very common mistakes.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Thanks a lot, Mike.
And don't buy anything for your landscape that smells bad, Dwight.
Right, exactly.
All right, Dwight. Good luck, man.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your time. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and invite our listeners to be involved in a very special upcoming show, where I will be joined by master fruit grower and pruning expert Lee Reich and Texas organic advocate Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor. But don't go emailing or calling us in your questions for those very special guests just yet, because we'll be right back to tell you all about webworms and pecan trees and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. And by Harvest Right. Harvest Right's home freeze dryer allows you to preserve your own freeze-dried food that can last 25 years. Meat, fruit, vegetables, and ice cream can be freeze-dried at home. More at harvestright.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. It's a double, perhaps a triple threat about the nasty caterpillars that make those big nests in your trees, and it's about pecan trees. But mostly we're celebrating our 17th anniversary on the air with your fabulous phone calls. So before the question of the week, a couple more of them at 1-888-346-9499. Mimi, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. This is Mimi, and I'm living right now in Wallingford, Pennsylvania, but I'm calling about my fig tree in Avalon, New Jersey.
Avalon, New Jersey is a beach resort town in southern New Jersey with the tagline, cooler by a mile.
You're right, and it is. But I keep having these figs that end up September, October, that are about the size of a plum, but they're hard as bullets, and
okay.
They're green.
Okay, so you have a fig tree or multiple fig trees down at your shore home?
Just one.
Where'd you get your tree?
From a friend.
And
a cutting from a friend.
Okay, and where does the friend live?
North Wildwood.
Oh, okay.
North Italian fig tree that's probably almost a story and a half high.
Right, and North Wildwood is further south than you, so, and it may be being grown in a more protected area. What do you do to protect your tree over winter?
Okay, well, I don't do anything that's probably right. Last year, I was afraid of the wind and all of that, so I pruned it very hard. And
you mean in the fall?
Yes.
Oh, that's the worst thing you could have done.
Okay, I pruned it to a short stick. However, this spring and summer, it bloomed and grew. It's probably 7 feet, 8 feet tall with many branches, many leaves, and many figs.
Okay.
And it just seemed to love this summer. But as I said, these figs are the size of a plum.
Okay, so here's the story. Figs are Mediterranean plants. They really, their DNA doesn't know from a true winter. And they need a long growing season, which means they can't become herbaceous perennials like hostas, the ones that die back to the ground.
Right. Okay.
And then regrow and flower. Figs need to start out the spring with a relatively large biomass. I'm going to throw like 4 to 6 feet in height of living green plant tissue. So the worst thing you can do is remove live tissue from a plant, especially in the winter. You are actually lucky. You might have achieved the ultimate non-goal of actually killing your fig by pruning it back, because then there was nothing to absorb winter other than the crown in the root system.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So you got never prune anything in the fall. Real simple. The plants are going dormant. They need their biomass to survive winter. So, for instance, no matter what happens this season, if all you do is don't prune it, you'll probably start the season with a more of a plant. But and is it growing close to a structure? Is it out in the open?
It's growing close to a fence that's only about 4 feet high, but it's close to a southern magnolia tree.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it's behind a garage.
Okay. Is it getting enough sun if it's under a magnolia?
Well, it didn't start out with that magnolia. That's my neighbor's. I would say it probably gets enough sun because it gets the morning and the afternoon. I think it gets enough sun.
Yeah. Everybody thinks their plants get enough sun. But when I talk to the plants, I find out that they're dying for lack of sun. Fruiting plants need more sun than big leafed plants. So it sounds like, although you're hemming and hawing, it's out in an exposed area. So what I would suggest you do is get some burlap, get some stakes, drive the stakes into the ground about a foot away from the plant, and wrap the stakes in burlap as high up as you can. Don't worry if you can't cover the entire plant.
Okay.
Wrapping it around the burlap will make a little heat sink around the bottom of the plant, which is the important part, and it'll also cut that brutal wind. And then in the spring, when you take down that burlap, when the plant starts growing again, prune off any winter-damaged parts at the top, but leave all of the good wood and all of the good leaves intact, and I think all you need is another month or 6 weeks of lively growth to get the full-size, nice, ripe, soft figs.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay.
And all you need to achieve that is to start the season off with a good-size live plant.
Okay. All right, I'm going to try it.
All right, good luck, Mimi.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jeff, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
And
doing
where's Jeff doing good?
Mount Ephraim, New Jersey, right outside of Philadelphia.
All right. What can we do for Jeff in the Garden State?
I've recently planted some English ivy in my backyard. I'm trying to form a buffer between me and a neighbor.
Okay. Now, let me stop you right there before you tell me whether you're having success, failure, no matter what your question is. There are many types of ivy, and they're often mislabeled. And the American Ivy Society will tell me that English ivy is well-behaved, and there's a strain called Irish ivy that actually causes the problems. But once it gets established, ivy is relatively unstoppable. Is there a way that you're going to keep this, quote, buffer from crossing over?
It's in the ideal place. I don't believe that it will ever need to be stopped. My problem is getting it going.
Yeah, well, tell me what's going on.
All right, so I put up a wire fence, you know, with a square rectangle holes in it.
Okay.
It's high. It's 11 foot high. So I got a nice topsoil in there. I planted the ivy 2 years ago, English ivy. It was marked that, you know, it was climbing ivy. And it's not climbing. It's creeping on the ground, and I've been weaving it through the fence, but if it wasn't for me doing that, I don't think it would be on the fence at all.
Right, because you're using the wrong type of structure.
Really?
Yes. Apparently, it was always intended horticulturally as a ground cover, and your experience is totally normal and natural. Now, for some reason, this plant takes a little bit to get established, a couple of years, but then it, like, accelerates from 0 to 60 in 4 seconds and starts growing like mad. So it sounds like you're probably on the cusp of it getting...
I'm coming up on 2 years since I put it in the ground.
Yeah, yeah. So you're right where the books would say you should be, being a little frustrated at its slow growth. 2 years from now, you're going to be horrified at the speed of its growth. But as you notice, think where you've seen climbing ivy. You've seen it on the Ivy League schools, famously. You've seen it on other buildings of brick and stone. You've seen
trees.
You've seen it climbing up trees. What's the difference between those things and your fence?
It's a solid surface, not a wire fence.
Ding, 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 ding. Jeff wins the big money. Now, what you can do, since you have erected this Berlin Wall that obviously is meant to separate you and your neighbors, is it wouldn't seem to me to be very hard to lay some solid material over your side of the fencing. And it really doesn't matter, you know, what that material is, whatever you can find. You know, try to keep it nice looking, because you're going to have to look at it while the ivy climbs. It's really only going to adhere to a solid surface. But I'm warning you, this is an invasive plant, and you would be held liable if this invasive plant that you put in the ground crossed onto their property and, say, went up into one of their trees. And
well, it's not. There's not a neighbor living next door. It's more of a commercial situation.
Okay. Well, that's to your benefit, but they're going to have an ivy lawn in 10 years.
Yeah, there's no lawn there. There's no landscaping at all. So I have it in an elevated planter box right now. It's about maybe 12 to 16 inches off.
Oh, that's weird. Why'd you do that?
Just because of the way I built the fence and I built a box at the bottom.
Okay, well, that's another reason for your slow growth, Jeff. Those roots are being subjected to freezing over the winter.
Okay.
You know, one thing we've always pointed out in the show is it's very dicey to grow plants in containers outdoors over the winter time. The same plant that would get through winter with a breeze might freeze to death because its roots are so far above the frost line.
It looks healthy. It's growing. There's a new growth. It's just not climbing.
Right. It is natural for it to grow slowly at this stage, and you are severely shocking it every winter because of the way you chose to plant it. Ivy is a very tough plant. It's, you know, we've been through the two most severe winters in our recent memory, so obviously it's not going to kill it, but everything about the situation explains the slow growth of the ivy. Trust me, it's going to pick up really soon. It needs a solid object to hold on to if you want it to go up and make an ivy wall for you. I will warn you again that it's invasive. It's going to attack on all fronts. It's not only going to go onto that property, it's going to come back at you, and it's going to go off to the side. Although with it being in a box, you can probably control the growth on your side. And if you want more information, the American Ivy Society is a great resource. And their website is super easy. It's just ivy.org.
Okay.
All right. And they'll explain to you the growth pattern of the plant, and they'll help you get rid of it when it becomes a monster.
If it gets to a point where I have in my picture in my mind, it's going to be perfect.
All right. Well, we wish you perfection, Jeff.
I'm confident I'll get there sooner or later.
All right. Good luck, man. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Bye-bye. All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Webworms in general and on pecan trees in particular. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please get us started with this week's multi-part question.
I'd be happy to, Mike. Emily in Edmond, Oklahoma writes, I have a beautiful large pecan tree that came with our new home. The first couple of years we lived here didn't really do anything. The third season, the tree was so full of nuts, the branches were dragging on the ground. I would stare at it and dream of pecan pie. But before they started to drop, the tree was picked clean. Not sure if it was the squirrels or crows, but I did not get one single pecan. Now I'm afraid I have bigger problems than creatures stealing my nuts. At the end of the summer last year, I noticed two small areas of webworms. Didn't think much about it until we returned from a long vacation this summer to find webs all over the tree. So I have three big questions. Can I just cut out the infected branches and throw them away? Some are pretty high up, and I'll have to hire someone to do it. I really want to know what you think before I get someone out here trying to convince me to spray the tree with 7.
Well, these pests are very similar to the tent caterpillars that build their big, nasty-looking nests in trees in the spring. Despite their common name, however, fall webworms are also caterpillars. Any horticultural pest with the word worm in its name is a caterpillar.
And they give real worms a bad name.
You got it. And this fall part is also misleading. As Emily has learned, mid to late summer webworms is more like it. Now, the book does say to prune out the infested branches, at least the ones you can reach. But when these pests appeared in my crabapple tree a few years back, I just ripped their nest apart with a long pole pruner, and then birds made short work of all those exposed caterpillars.
I like that. And of course, she can spray the tree with the original strain of BT, BTK. It only harms caterpillars that chew on the sprayed leaves.
Right, so that means you have to remember to spray it on the tree while the caterpillars are actively eating. And it would be nice if, again, you could bust up at least some of their tent cities a little bit first. But you have to realize that whether you use a bird, bee, and people-safe pesticide like BT or a nasty chemical one, those ugly webs are going to still stay there. And in most cases with homeowners, it's the aesthetic, or, you know, lack of it, that nasty, messy look of the thing up in the trees, that's the biggest issue for them.
But don't they harm the tree?
Not generally. Trees typically grow new leaves after the tent caterpillars stop feeding in the spring, and fall webworms generally attack after a lot of the photosynthesis has already occurred.
Here's Emily's second question. Can I collect and compost the leaves from the tree, or will they be infected with worms? I would hate to spread them any further.
Well, it's kind of a trick answer. The eggs of the next year's generation are either going to be placed on or just under the bark, down in the soil itself, or in the leaf litter under the tree.
So it's a good idea to rake up and compost the leaves to get rid of one hiding place.
Yeah, and just to be safe, then you want to make sure you shred those leaves really well and then compost them in a truly hot pile. That's just shredded leaves mixed with either coffee grounds or horse manure for nitrogen. No kitchen waste in this compost to cool things down.
And her third question. This is the first year the nuts are falling off early in a green, underdeveloped state. This has been a pretty mild summer with some good rain early, so I would have thought that the tree would be doing awesome. Do you think the worms are the reason?
Yes and no. An excellent Texas A&M Extension bulletin on pecan growing notes that, quote, any stress can cause the nuts to drop prematurely. And an unusually large number of hungry, hungry caterpillars can be very stressful, especially if the tree is also dehydrated. Pecans are thirsty trees that are going to do best with some irrigation during long dry spells in the summer. But nut drop can also be caused by a lot of other things. A hard freeze the previous winter, or even attack by weevils and other pests. And for that, she should check the dropped nuts for those distinctive little holes those creatures make. Now, I suggest she hack away at any nest she has. Clean up her leaf litter promptly, and hang suet feeders in the tree, but let them go empty for a week or two at a time, so the meat-eating birds attracted by the suet will also then look for eggs in the tree bark in between the human-provided meals. I think she should also think about watering deeply once a week in the summer if rain is scarce, and she should mulch the tree with 2 inches of compost going out as far as the furthest branch to provide a gentle feeding, and begin spraying the tree with BT next summer as soon as you see the first sign of worms. Now, if she handles those pests, she might get lucky enough to need to research the squirrel and bird deterrents next fall. Well, that sure was some interesting information about messy caterpillars and tasty nuts now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, with a link to that excellent Texas A&M bulletin we mentioned, just check the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to web my trees if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore. As long as you tell us where you live, at garden@whyy.org. Oh, and please tell us where you live, especially if you think we don't need it. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where we don't care where you live, but where you will find the answers to all your garden questions, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz and Lauren Elkins keep our site well-webbed. Free of webs is Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our editor, Al Banks, is looking a little webby, while production assistant Stephen Drehobol is kind of nutty. I'm Mike McGrath, and I've been feeling a little nutty ever since I got bitten by that radioactive spider. So I'll just say happy anniversary to us, and keep thy webs untangled, true believers, until we see you again next week. Planning to let your begonias, impatiens, and peppers die with the first frost? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll tell you how to perennialize those plants, keep evil squirrels at bay, and more. Plus your fabulous phone calls.